In bacterial endocarditis, or it's called infective endocarditis, it is an infection of the inner lining of the heart and its valves. And the heart has four valves. So the heart has two inner chamber valves and two outer chamber valves. The two valves in the heart chambers are called the atrioventricular valve, the AV valve. Now, this AV valve include the tricuspid valve, that's one, and you have the mitral valve, the mitral valve. So these two valves are formed within the heart. So for example, these are the two valves. This valve is one, this is another one. So this one has three leaflets, it's called a tricuspid valve. This has two, it's called a mitral valve. So these two valves are formed within the heart chamber. Then we have two other valves outside the heart chamber, which include one, the pulmonic valve and the aortic valve. So this is the pulmonic valve, and this is the aortic valve. So these two valves are formed outside the heart. Two of them are referred to as the semilunar valve, the semilunar valve. So basically, there are four heart valves: pulmonic, aortic. They are on the semilunar. Mitral, tricuspid, they are in the heart. They are called the atrioventricular valve. Now, so in the case of bacterial endocarditis, there is an infection of this valve. There's an infection of this valve with some other bacteria, or heart infection with some bacterial organism. The child becomes very feverish. There will be fever. There will be malaise. There will be new heart murmur occurring. There will be atragia. There will be arthralgia. There will be atragia occurring. There will be the child will have atragia. There will be diaphoresis. There will be weight loss. There will be diaphoresis, and there will be weight loss under here. So these are the common symptoms and signs for bacterial endocarditis. The child going to also have, for the neonates, they're going to have heart failure. They will have respiratory distress. For the neonates, they're going to have respiratory distress. Two, they're going to have septicemia. They will have septicemia, and they will have poor feeding and other conditions coming. They will have infection, event. They will have infection automatically, because there will be something in the system that's not supposed to be in the system. So that will cause them to have infection, and they'll have fever and other things happening. So we can do the CBC, the ESRA, urinalysis, and we do blood culture. We can do the CBC for them, complete blood count. In their CBC, there will be increase in the red blood cells because there's infection. We'll do the ESRA, the erythrocyte sedimentary rate. It will be elevated also. And then we can do blood culture, blood CNS, to know what is causing the infection directly. We can do EKG, we can do chest X-ray, we can do CT scan, we can do MRI. Those are things we can do. Now, under here, my most important thing under here for the NCLEX would be the nursing management for this condition. The nursing management is I want to look at mainly. For the nursing management for this bacterial endocarditis, you want to make sure you administer antibiotics parenterally for an extended length of time. It is done through the PICC, the PICC line. It's done through the PICC line. We've done the PICC line in this class before. So look at the PICC line. It's done in this class. We did the PICC line, the central line, we did all these things so that you can know them. Now, you administer antibiotics for 2 to 8 weeks. 2 to 8 weeks antibiotics, and it can be administered, and then you make sure you follow up on the medication. We also counsel the parents to use preventive antibiotics. Now, for this condition, anytime the child is having dental appointment, that's all I want to stress. In any dental appointment, when a child has bacterial endocarditis or has had it before, they will use prophylactic antibiotics before the treatment. If the child is at risk for this condition, before any dental procedure, they will take antibiotics as preventive measure before the procedure can be done. You want to maintain high level of care, educate the patient and their family on the signs and symptoms of the infection. They should make sure they should do a follow-up. They can use a very high dose of anti-infective medication or antibiotic for 2 to 8 weeks. They should administer IV, not PO. So you treat the condition through IV. You want to make sure do that. High-risk patients should receive preventive antibiotics therapy prior to any surgical procedure, any dental procedure, any respiratory procedure, and any other skin procedure that will involve the respiratory system, because those are systems that bacteria can pass through and go into the breathing system and cause bacterial endocarditis. You want to make sure for high risk treatment, any child that have artificial heart valves, they've been previously diagnosed with this condition, they have heart condition that has not been repaired, they are using any heart defect or any heart or metal, like in the case of they had like a something in their heart that helped them to breathe, like a metal or like any prosthesis in their body that is prone to infection, they should be able to take preventive antibiotics before those procedures can be done. You want to make sure if the child already has they had a stent placed in their body, maybe like they did balloon angioplasty, because in those procedure, they will leave something in your heart, in your body, to prevent the recurrence of what is being prevented or what is being treated. For any one of those procedure, the patient needs to get on preventive treatment for the first 6 months after the procedure, and they should be able to make sure they stick to the preventive treatment until after 6 months. So that means, let's say someone has a shunt placement in the heart, right? So after the procedure, to prevent bacterial endocarditis, this individual should be on preventive treatment for at least 6 months before they can stop the medication. They might have common symptoms for this condition would be malaise, decreased appetite, weight loss, and low-grade fever. So whenever the child has had bacterial endocarditis, we should always look out for these symptoms: low-grade fever, poor feedings, malaise, decreased appetite. Those are the common symptoms for a patient who has had this condition before. Any question? So we have shock has two types. You have what we call the cardiogenic shock, and you have the anaphylactic shock. Whether it is cardiogenic or anaphylactic, these are conditions that are very much emergency. These are emergency conditions that we're going to look at very fast. For the first one, this results from an impaired heart function that leads to decreased cardiac output. In the cardiogenic shock, there's an impaired heart function that gave rise to decreased cardiac output in this cardiogenic shock. Now, in anaphylactic shock, there is a condition in which the patient is hypersensitive to foreign substances that will lead to massive dilation. That will lead to massive dilation and capillary leak, which can occur, like when there's an insect or stings, blood transfusion, latex allergies, or other medication allergy. So in anaphylactic shock, it will lead to the airway will become dilated. That's what happened in anaphylactic shocks. So in this case, there is decreased cardiac output. There's a heart impairment that will cause decreased cardiac output, which will lead to cardiogenic shock. In anaphylactic shock, there is something that is foreign to the body that gets into the body that stimulates the body to produce some other histamines, and this will lead to vessel dilatation, which can be referred to as the anaphylactic shock. It could be either allergic to latex or medications, insect stings, or blood transfusion. Now, whether it is cardiogenic shock or anaphylactic shock, the symptoms include: one, we are going to have dyspnea. There will be dyspnea in both conditions as one. Two, there is going to be a breath sound with crackles. There will be crackles on the breath sound, crackles. Three, the patient will have hypotension, grunting. They will have hypotension. They will have grunting. They will have tachycardia. And then lastly, they're going to have weak peripheral pulses. They'll have weak peripheral pulses. So the two conditions have similar symptoms. They're going to have symptoms of heart failure. Then they're going to have other cyanosis, poor weight gain, tachypnea, dyspnea, polycythemia. They'll have polycythemia. They're going to have hypoxemia, other blood condition that will cause them to have low breath rate. They will have clubbing fingernails in this condition. And we can do for them the ABGs, including the pH. We can do the hemoglobin and hematocrit to know their blood levels. We can do the EKG for them. We can do X-ray to check the heart size. So now the heart will become enlarged. These are things we can do for them. Now, for this patient, for this condition, the nursing management are also what I want you to pay attention to. Now, when there's a shock condition, whether it is cardiogenic or it is anaphylactic shock, they will panic, they will have anxiety. And yesterday we said, once the patient having any condition in the ankle that deal with anxiety, the child will panic. When they are panicking, you do not leave the client alone. Don't leave them alone. That's the first thing. Don't leave the patient alone. Do not leave them alone. That's the first thing you want to remember very well. Do not leave them alone. That's one thing you want to remember for the patient. Another thing for this patient, you have to keep them well hydrated. Well hydration is important for them. Another thing is you want to make sure you conserve the child energy, give them frequent rest period, perform daily with the input and output you perform it for these children. Make sure you monitor the heart rate, blood pressure, and the electrolytes levels. You make sure you maintain fluid balance. You administer medication as prescribed, provide support for both the family and the patient himself or herself. You want to make sure you administer potassium supplements. It's important. Increase potassium supplement for these children in under here. Potassium supplements. So you give them food that are high in potassium, which you should know that, like banana. Get them food that are high in potassium. You want to make sure and check for food that are high in potassium and know them, because this is endless. They could bring you questions from anywhere. They will ask you, a patient who is having anaphylactic shock, what type of food the patient will need. A, they will give you the different food groups A, B, and C, and D. You should know that they need food that are high in potassium to give good contractive energy to the heart, because potassium works on the heart directly. It gives the heart its contractive power when the heart is failing. That's why you want to increase potassium. You want to make sure this might not be together if the child is concurrently taking AC inhibitors. If the child is on AC inhibitors, meaning they do not need potassium supplement, because AC inhibitors, ACE, have to do with potassium. So if they on AC, you remember what we're talking about, we're talking about this medication and potassium. So I want, when you read these things, you remember like how we ask them, because you have to link them. The NCLEX critical thinking lies in how much information we can retain and link them together and make to make sense for us. So we're talking about AC inhibitors and potassium. We're talking about the anti-hypertensive medication. This is one of the anti-hypertensive medication, AC inhibitors. Now, if the patient is on this medication, we do not need to increase level of potassium, because it's going to be like adding up more, which will be hyperkalemia, which is also not good for the heart. So the heart needs to be between 3.5 to 5.0 potassium level. And now it's high for this heart, it's hyperkalemia. And now it's low for this heart, it's hypokalemia, which can also cause heart murmur. Whether it is high or low, it is not good. It should be between 3.5 to 5.0. So you look at the patient is on this medication already, they do not need to increase their potassium supplement anymore. Just so you know that. You want to make sure for these patients, you maintain sodium and fluid restriction. You want to restrict their sodium level for patients who are having shock. You want to make sure for them, decrease the workload on the heart, that you have maintain good bed rest. The child should be positioned in a car seat that is at 45-degree angle. If they are in a car seat, the car seat must be at 45-degree angle. For patients who are having this problem and they are in the car seat to take it to another hospital, they got to be in 45-degree angle. You got to make sure you keep safety restraint low and loose on the abdomen. You cannot tie the abdomen for them very tight, they're going to cause them problem. You want to make sure you allow the children to try to sleep with pillow under their head. Like, they should always be in a Fowler or semi-Fowler position with this condition. You want to make sure you provide adequate nutrition for them. You should be able to feed them every 3 hours. Get them enough rest. And you want to use, if they are sucking, they need to suck on soft nipples. Hold the infant in a semi-upright position at always for this condition. You want to make sure we allow them to rest during feeding period, taking at least 30 minutes to complete the feedings. Gavage feeds the infant if he is unable to consume food by himself. So we use gastric gavage to feed them if they cannot eat by themselves. We increase the calorie intake. We encourage mother to feed the babies to make sure if they're using breast milk or fortified formula, make sure they feed the baby regularly. We increase tissue O2 by providing cold and humidified O2 through an O2 hood. Now, this is very important. Let me just go over this. You see here the NCLEX, when you are reading this material, you got to connect. Now they say here you should provide an oxygen O2 via oxygen hood. Oxygen hood. Now, oxygen hood is another form of device we use to deliver O2 to the patient. Now, we said when we did the viral O2 delivery system, we talk about face mask, the simple face mask. We talk about the non-rebreather mask, the rebreather mask. Now, we said all these masks, one of the disadvantages they had was, for this mask, we said it can cause claustrophobia. It makes the patient go into phobia, because it covers their mouth and nose. So that feeling of phobia in them. If they have phobia, they cannot use this mask. So we'll use for them nasal cannula, if they have face mask, or even the oxygen hood. The oxygen hood is under the high O2 delivery system. This hood is like in this form. It hangs over the face, it blows O2 into the face. Then the nose will be able to grab the O2 and put it to the lungs. So when a child has shock, we cannot use any of these masks to help them. We will use a mask that will provide them less phobia, which will be the oxygen hood. That's why the book said you administer O2 using the oxygen hood to do your O2 delivery. Because if you use other masks like these masks, they're going to cause more phobia. And we said the children in here, they're having anxiety, they're having panic disorder or panic attack. We do not leave them alone. We stay with them, give them support, and we make sure we still that we don't leave them alone. So in that situation, leaving them alone will increase anxiety for them and also carry them into more panic attacks. So you make sure you stay with them to reduce the anxiety to prevent panic attack in the case of shock. We can administer digoxin for them also. Look at the heart rate. Know the heart rate for children and for adolescents. We gotta make sure when you're using digoxin, know the normal digoxin level to make sure you are in a safe environment. 0.8, right? To what? To 2 is the normal digoxin level for patients who on digoxin. You wanna make sure sometimes we can administer AC inhibitors. The AC you talked about just a while ago, AC medications. Example is the pearls, the PRIL, the capital pearl, lisinopril. Those are all pearls that fall under the AC inhibitors. So they can take AC medication for this condition. It can also help them. They can also take the beta blockers. The beta blockers, example, the law, LOL, la beta law, metoprolol. They can also take those medications. They are all under beta blockers. We can also give them the furosemide. They can take furosemide or laces, or they can also take chlorothiazide under the Taza diuretic. So we can give them both Taza diuretics, and we can also give them the loops diuretics, like the furosemide. We can also administer them other medications. We should make sure we follow the safe method. We are providing them these medications. Any question?